Okay, we're going to start here at the top of Ayin Bet Amud Aleph. We're continuing from what the Gemara left off with yesterday, which was, what was the Chiddush of Rabba? Rabba told us about Tuma Blua, and truthfully, his Chiddush was really by Tuma Blua, by Tahara, something that's Tahor Blua. The Gemara wanted to know what the Chiddush was whatsoever, because we find this information in Mishnayot. We know about Tuma Blua and Tahara Blua from Mishnayot. So what was the Chiddush of Rabba? So yesterday a machloket between Rashi and Tosafot, what the Chiddush was. In the end, Rabba says it's about Shtei Taba'ot, when you have two rings, one that's Tamea, one's Tehora, that are found inside of the individual. So it's Tuma Bula. Do they affect each other? Rashi felt that from the Mishnayot, we could have concluded that it was Tumat Beit Hasdarim. Instead, Rabba comes and tells us, no, the real reason behind the Mishnayot is Tuma Bula, and therefore, what I say is true also, which is that when you have the Shteita Ba'ot inside of the individual, they are not affect each other. Tosafot said, no, from the Mishnayot, you would have known Tuma Blua. The Chiddush of Rabba is that Tuma Blua is as if it's non-existent. When it's inside the individual, even when you have these two rings inside of there, it's as if there's nothing going on. Even though you have something Tamei and something Tahor inside of the individual, but it's as if there's nothing left in there, because until they come out and exit again, we won't have any consideration for the Tuma. And that was the Chiddush of Rabba. The difference is not happening. I mean, in the end, it's Shteita Ba'ot that are not Tamei each other. The question is, what did Rabba add to us that we didn't have on the Mishnayot? According to Rashi, he added that the explanation of the Mishnayot is Tuma Blua. According to Tosafot, he added to us that Tuma Blua, when inside of an individual, makes the Tuma and Tara irrelevant. Alright, so now, the Gemara asks a question. We did all of this, but we didn't even touch on our Mishnah yet. So now the Gemara comes back, it says, okay, once we've done all this background information, let's go to our Mishnah. Va'ubar v'chaya, kishtei taba'ot dami. What about the situation in our Mishnah where you have an ubar, you have a fetus inside, and you have the midwife placing her hand inside? That's the equivalent of shtei taba'ot. It's equivalent of having two items inside of an individual, one that's Tahor, one that is Tamei, you have the midwife who's Tahora, and you have the Ubar, which is Tamei, and now they're coming into contact inside of the woman. And our Mishnah says that the Ubar affects the midwife. Now, what the question is really depends, that's why I went back to explain what Rashi and Tosafot's Machloket was about Rabba, it depends what you think the Havamina was. According to Rashi, what does that mean? We're challenging this idea of Shtei Taba'ot, which means we're going to take a step back, and we're going to go back to Tumat Beit Hasdarim. That's what Rashi suggests over here. What's the difference between the midwife and the woman giving birth? Why is it the woman giving birth? Tmeya. The answer to that is, it's Tumat Beit Hasdarim. For the woman who's giving birth, contact is considered or classified as Tumat Beit Hasdarim, Maga Beit Hasdarim, who? And therefore, she is Torah. On the other hand, for the Chaya, now that she comes in contact, Tuma Blua won't help, and therefore she is Tmeya, the Chaya is Tmeya. So that's what Rashi says when we take a step back. On the other hand, Tosafot says, the Gemara's suggestion here is that we take a step back and we say, Ein Ochanami, when we have an individual piece of Tuma inside of the woman, that is Tahor. You have an individual piece of Tara inside of an individual, that will not become Tamei. But when you have two objects inside Tuma Blua, they can affect each other. And that means that the Chaya is Tmeya, the midwife is Tmeya, because she is something Torah coming into contact with Tuma inside of the Tuma Blua. That doesn't help you. Whereas the woman herself remains Torah because it's Tuma Blua. For her, there's only one issue, which is that the fetus inside is Tmeya. But that doesn't affect her, because that's one item, and that's Tuma Blua. So she's not affected by that. Whereas the Chaya, who goes in, now you have like two tabot, you have two objects inside, they do affect each other. So that's the Gemara's question according to Tosafot. So depending on what you thought Rabba's Chiddush is, that will determine what you think the question here is at this point. Amar Rabba, Shani Ubar, Ho Besofo Latzeit. So Shani Ubar, because in the end it will exit the woman. So it's considered as if it's out already. The Tuma Blua is crossed out here because of this end game where the Ubar will exit the woman.
Therefore what?
Therefore, this is an exceptional case. It's not considered like Tuma Blua, because in the end it's coming out.
It should not be
Tahor. Correct. Amar Rava challenges that and says, Ubar sofo latzeit, tabat ein sofo latzeit. You know that if he ingested a ring, the end game is that that's coming out also. And there we clearly classified it as Tuma Blua.
In its original form.
Right. Cases of the Mishnayot were that it was ingested, and that he's going to excrete this ring at some point in time. That was the whole Kiddush, that when it comes out, it retains its original status, whether Tameh, whether Tahor. So if that's the case, then the Ubar also that's coming out, I don't see the difference between the cases. El Amarova, Pumpeditai, Yadei, Taima, Dahamilta. People in Pumpedita know the reason for this. Umanu, who's that? Rav Yosef. Dam Rav Yosef, Am Rav Yehuda, Mar Shmuel. Tumazu eina midivrei Torah ela midivrei sofrim. The tumah that we're discussing over here is a tumah de rabbanan and not a tumah de oraita. Once you've done that, you've eliminated all the problems. Because truthfully, Rabba is correct. This idea of the shtei tabaot, tumah blua, all of that is correct. Our Mishnah, why is the chayat me'ah? That's not a din de oraita. That's a din de rabbanan. So what does it mean? My eina midivrei Torah ela midivrei sofrim. The low tema, don't say aliba de Rabbi Akiva damar ubar b'meisha tamei, that an ubar while still inside the woman is tamei, and if you come into contact with it, you are tamei. Ela afilu de Rabbi Shmuel damar ubar b'meisha tahor, even according to Rabbi Shmuel says, when the ubar is inside, it is tahor, gazru batum ami de Rabbanan. They were gozer on that ubar that would be mitamei mid Rabbanan. My time, what's the reasoning behind that? We have to understand what this Zera de Rabbanan is about. If we really believe that Tuma Blua is not a problem, then why over here do we make a Zera in this particular case where the midwife sticks her hand in that she becomes Tmeah? What's unique about this case? Because Amar Rav Hoshaya, Zera Shema Yotzi Vlad Rusho Chutz Lepruzdor. Our fear here is that the baby will actually exit the birth canal and the midwife will not be aware of it. She would say something about the woman herself. Maybe she won't know that the baby has exited the birth canal and know that when she is Tameah. Isha margeshet be'atzma. She has the sensation of, or the sense of touch, feel, so she knows when the baby's exited the pruzdor, whereas the midwife will not know that. So when it says, v'temel al d'chaya, so let her tell the chaya when it's out. Say trida. She's a little busy. She's in chevle leida. She's in the pangs of birth, and so she's not going to have the time or the wherewithal to explain that to the chaya. So now the difference, and this was an important difference that Rashi points out, we also had the case by the ro'eh, the case by the shepherd that sticks his hand in to touch the fetus that died inside of the beima, and over there we didn't suggest that the ro'eh became tameh. What is the distinction between that and the case of the woman? That goes back to something that we discussed earlier, the difference between a human being and a behema. That's what Rashi says over here. By the behema, the Beit Arechem is right there. As soon as it opens up, the behema exits. There's nothing that covers it up. There's nothing that conceals it. Right, as soon as the animal exits, it's visible. Whereas by the woman, as we said before, Yerachayim, her thighs cover up the exiting of the baby. So it's not always obvious that the baby has exited right away. The midwife is not always aware immediately that the baby has exited. So by the case of the fetus in the woman, we have a fear that it could exit without the knowledge of the midwife, or she will not be completely aware. And therefore, if she puts her hand in, we make her Tmeah Midrabanan, because that fine line of when it exits is not so clear. So in order to avoid any problems, we make her Tmeah Tumah Derabanan once she puts her hand in. Whereas, when a case of the behemah and the roeh, where it's obvious when the animal exits, over there is no gzera. Also for the woman herself, there is no gzera because she will know, she will sense when that transition has happened, and therefore there will be no issue for the woman herself. It's only an issue for the midwife. That will explain our Mishnah. That will leave Rabba intact. Rabba's din of Tumah Blua is intact now, both from an individual standpoint. If you have Tumah Blua, it does not project outwards. Tara Blua will not be Mikabel Tuma. And the Chiddush of Rabba, which is if you have Shtei Tavot, two items together, Tameh and Tahor, inside, that are Bluim, they will not affect each other. All of that will remain intact. And our Mishnah will be explained by this Gzeira de Rabbanan. My Rabbi Shmuel or my Rabbi Akiva? Let's first understand, what's Rabbi Shmuel and what's Rabbi Akiva? We just quoted them, assuming that you knew what they were, but what are they? What are their opinions? Titanya, we have a bright, V'chol HaSheiga Al Pnei HaSadeh. So anything that comes in contact, al pnei asadeh, on the open field. Lo tzi ubar b'meisha, divi Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that something blew out when the fetus is inside the woman, its status remains tahor, because it doesn't qualify to be al pnei asadeh. Rabbi Kiva Omer, lo rabot golel v'dofek. No, Pnei HaSadeh is not coming to teach you exclude Enubar, but rather to include the Golel V'Tofek. Golel V'Tofek, Rashi over here says what he says everywhere in Shas, which is the Golel is Kisoi Haron HaShemet, it's the cover of the Aron HaShemet, and the Dofek is the Dafshnot Nimbitzido, the walls that hold up the cover of the Aron. That's Rashi. Tosafot over here doesn't mention it. He references you to Ktubot. Tosafot, in many places in Shas, argues with Rashi about what the Golel and the Dofek are. The Rabbeinu Tam, in many places, says the Golel and Dofek are the equivalent of what we, the monument on top of the burial place of the Meit. Tosafot, in many places, says the Golel and Dofek is the stone that they rolled over the Aron, or put on top to block it. What I would suggest is, and I think that this would make a lot of sense. It's on top of the kever. On top of the kever or on top of the Aron, whatever they're placing it over. I think if you go to many places in Israel where they had burial caves, in front of the cave, there's a golel, there's a circular stone that rolls, that opened and closed the cave, and the dofek is the stopper. I mean, how do you stop that stone from rolling? You put a plug underneath it to stop it from rolling away. So you roll it in front of the cave, and then you put the equivalent of you are a car to stop it if it's on a hill to roll down. You have to place something in there to stop the wheels from rolling. So too, the dofek holds the golel in place. So if you ask me what the golel and dofek are, my explanation would be that it's that covering. It makes a lot of sense in the context of being a golel and dofek. The Tosafot do something similar, but they don't exactly explain it as the cover of the cave. They still work with the kever itself and the covering over the meit. Over here, the golel and dofek to me seem to be, if you just from the practical standpoint, what you see that it's this the wheel in front and the plug that holds the wheel in place. So Rabbi Shmuel, Golel v'dofek hilchata gemiri lo. Rishmael gets rid of that problem that Rabbi Akiva raises and says that's halacha l'moshe misinai. V'Rabbi Akiva ubar b'meisha tamei midoraita. And Rabbi Akiva disagrees with Rabbi Shmuel's premise that an ubar inside of a woman is tahor. Rabbi Akiva believes that it's tamei doraita. Midoraita, it's tamei. And there is no, as you said before, Shaul, there is no tumah blua according to Rabbi Akiva. If you look in Rashi, it's the first Rashi opposite the Gemara. Lo tema matznita in Rabbi Akiva hi. Don't say our Mishnah is Rabbi Akiva. Damar ubar meit shmei shatamei. Hilchach mitamei lechaya detum'a blu'a mitam'a. That's vitara blu'a mitam'a. Either way, it doesn't work. Blu'a is irrelevant. So what did he do with the Mishnayot? Visha teora mishum maga beit starim hu. Again, Rashi reverts back to that Rabbi Akiva will agree about maga beit starim. That is able to protect you. But Tumah Blua, according to Rabbi Akiva, does not exist. And that's what you were asking. According to Rabbi Akiva, there is no Tumah Blua. So Minale, where does he know this from? Amar Oshaya Amar Kra, Hanogea B'meit B'nefesh. Ezu Meit Shebenefesh Shel Adam. What is something that could be deceased, but inside of the individual? Havei Omer Zeubar Shebemeisha. And this is one of the things enumerated in Parshat Chukat that you're Tameh. Hanogea B'meit B'nefesh. If you come into contact with a mate, the inside of a nefesh, you're tamei. So that's the tumah blua, which is going to Rabbi Akiva, the uber, b'mei isha, that is tmeya. Rabbi Shmuel, hai mi boyele, the revi adam abba min amet, shetamitama. Rabbi Shmuel uses that pasuk to teach us about the din of revi'at adam. If you have a revi'at of dam that has exited from, drained out of a mate, shemitama, that it causes tumah. So why is the Revi'at Adam significant? Because Chazal believe the Revi'at Adam is the life force of the individual. That's the amount of dam that an individual keeps the individual alive. So therefore, if it's drained out of the mate, it has the same qualities as the mate. It'll be matamei to matamate when you have a Revi'at Adam together. And he learns that out, Shenemar, Hanogea b'neit b'nefesh ha'adam. How can you be nogea b'mate, which is the nefesh ha'adam? Ezu nefesh shel adam shemitamei. What is the life force of the adam? Rabbi Omer zuvri adam, and that's we have by the karbanot as well. You're not allowed to eat the blood because ki adam hu a nefesh, and also you put on the mizbeach the dam which is the nefesh. So it's over here when we're using the term nefesh, referring to the dam or vi adam of the individual.
I mean, the thought should be that if an Uber is considered a mate, that's a tamei.
It's a good question. The default should be that there is no tumah bluah. Obviously, you have to say that something that's not called a nefesh. Tumah tamet has to do with something that has a din of a nefesh, of a live being. And so you might have considered the ubar not to be a live being, and therefore cannot convey tumah until it exits the woman. But it might be here that in particular to tumah tamet, that there's a requirement that it be something that's a nefesh, that's outside of the mother, an independent nefesh. Al pnei asadeh, on the open field. While it's in the mother, it doesn't have that status, so maybe it doesn't garner tumat amet, and therefore he needs the pasuk to teach you that chiddush. I guess that's what I would suggest. Right now, what about Rabbi Akiva? What does Rabbi Akiva do about Rabbi Atadam? Akiva the tamay, the damar af Rabbi Atadam, abba mishnei metim mitamei bohel. Rabbi Akiva is different than Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says you need Rabbi Atadam from a single mate in order for you to be mitamei ketumat amet. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, even if it's Rabbi Atadam that comes from two metim, the Tanya, Rabbi Akiva, Mer Minan Rabbi Atadam Abba Mishnei Metim Mishin Demetama Abba Ohel. How do I know if you have in total Rabbi Atadam that was contributed by two Metim that has the status of a mate and therefore it's Metam Abba Ohel Shenemar V'Al Kol Nafshot Mate Lo Yavo Nafshot in plural. So where do you have Nafshot? Shtei Nefashot V'Shiur Achad. It's two Nefashot that are creating one mate. How do you have two Nefashot that are creating one mate? That is the Rabbi Atadam that is combined from two meitim. What does Rabbi Shmuel do with that? What does Rabbi Shmuel do with that? It's a difference in a Korean active. Nafshot is written chaser in the Torah. So it's a question if you have aim lemisoret or aim lemikra. In aim lemisoret, nafshot is written in the singular, and that's what Rabbi Shmuel will learn. Nafshot in the singular, so therefore he doesn't have a problem. Whereas Rabbi Akiva learns it as aim lemikra, the way you read it. The way you read it is nafshot in the plural.
It was in the singular.
So therefore, Rabbi Ishmael doesn't have this din of two meitim. He uses the pasuk that's found in Chukat to teach you that Rabbi Atadam from a single mate is mitameh. And there he doesn't have that pasuk available to teach you that a fetus inside of the woman is mitameh. Whereas Rabbi Akiva, who uses this pasuk to teach you that Rabbi Atadam can even come from the contribution of two meitim, he will not use the pasuk in Chukat to teach you that Rabbi Atadam, because that's not true. It's a revealed that you don't need one mate to create the Vietadam, and therefore he uses that pasuk to teach us about Nogeh B'mate B'nefesh, is talking about an Uber, and fire inside of the woman is Mitameh, and there is no Tumah Blua according to Rabbi Akiva. Right now, the next part of the Gemara is mostly a Mishnah, and then we'll get a little piece into the Gemara, but a Mishnah also dealing with Tumah issues. Beima, Amak Shalei Leid. Beima is having difficulty birthing. Birthing process is going on. Votzi Ubarat Yodo. The fetus extends its arm out of the mother, v'chatcha, and it cuts it off. V'chakach shachatit imo, and then afterwards he shucks the mother, abasar tahor. The basar, the fetus that remains inside, is tahor, because it never came to contact, that's something that was tameh. The arm that was severed from the fetus is Eiver min achai. Eiver min achai has the same tum'ah as tum'at nivela. But he severed it while it was still alive. If he severed it while it's still alive, something that's alive is not mikabel tumah. We know that by animals that are alive are not mikabel tumah. So since he severed the arm while both the mother and the fetus were alive, the tumat nevela will affect that aver, the aver minachai, only, but it does not impact that which is left behind. On the other hand, shachatatimo, he shechs the mother, va'achar kachatcha. And then only afterwards does he sever the arm. Habasar, the remainder of the fetus, is magan nevela, Dibri Rabbi Meir. The arm itself is tamei tumat nevela, because it was Eiver min achai. Or now, when you're cutting it off, it has a din of tumat nevela, because shechita is not mitaharata.
That was out before the shechita.
Before the shechita, and even if he retracts it, depending on what shechita you hold up, but assuming even if you retract it, it makes no difference. When you shech the mother, the mother shechita affects the ubar, that it's kosher v'achila, tohor midei v'la, with exception to that arm. That the shechita doesn't impact that arm. That arm, the shechita will not help for. So it doesn't, since the shechita doesn't help the arm, that one arm is both asur v'achila, and tamei tumat nevela. So the remainder of the fetus is tamei tumat maga nevela. Came into contact with the nevela. You have an arm that is tamei tumat nevela, and it's contact with that nevela.
At the point of shechita, that limb was
The
Gemara's assumption is that once the mother's dead, the fetus is also dead. The fetus will not outlive the mother. But anyway, what happened here is that the yeshefta, the mother, the ubar found inside, whether it's alive or dead, it's really irrelevant. It's kosher. The entire ubar is kosher le'achila. Tahor midei nevela if it died. But here you're cutting off this limb. The limb that you cut off at this point in time is tamei tumat nevela. The remainder of the ubar came into contact with it. Now it only matters the remainder of the ubar if the ubar is dead. If the ubar is alive, it's not mekabel tumas. It's not relevant. It has to be that the ubar is also dead at this point in time. It's kosher ba'achila. When you sever now that arm, you're cutting off something that's nevela from something that is otherwise ochlim, that's ochel. So that conveys tumat nevela. And that's what Divrei Rabbi Meir. Chamim omrim, magat refa shchuta. No, it's not classified as a nevela, this arm, but rather as a trefa shchuta. You came into contact with something that is a trefa that was shechted. Now truthfully, a trefa that was shechted, what's the din? Tahor legamre. So if it's tahor legamre, then what are the chachamim suggesting over here? It came into contact with a trefa that shechted. A trefa that shechted has no tuma to it. Are they saying that it's tahor? What are they saying over here? That the Gemara will address. Hopefully we'll get to that today. Now, ma matzinu bitrefa. Sheshchitata mitaharata. We find by a trefa, when you shech the trefa, that is mitaharet midei nevela. Even though it's not machshirit ba'achila, it's still mitaharet midei nevela. Av shchitat behema, to taharet eiver. Okay, you cannot be matir this eiver ba'achila, because it was already outside. It was baser basadeb, trefa lo techil, it extended out of the mother before shchita. So the shchita of the mother cannot help it in terms of achila. But at least it should, at a minimum, help it with regards to being mitaheret midei nevela. That's what the chachamim are suggesting over here. Should be no worse than a trefa. Trefa you can't eat, but the shechita is mitaheret. So too over here. So Amar Lehem Rabbi Meir responds to them, lo, im tiara shechita trefa, ota davar shegufa, titaheret ha'ever davar she'eno gufa. Wait a minute, when you're talking about a trefa, which is something that belongs, or is a part, and parcel of the behema itself, that's why it's mitaher. Why should it be mitaher and aver, which is not part and parcel of the mother itself? I mean, it's a separate entity from the mother. So you can't suggest, just because something works by a trefa, we say anything that is part and parcel of the behema, that the shechita is mitaheret. Over here, the aver is no longer a part and parcel of the mother. It's not considered to be a part of the mother anymore. That's what creates the problem. It's outside. It's considered to be a foreign object, as well as the Uber itself is a foreign object. But especially this Eiver is a foreign object in the mother. Why should the Shechita of the mother have any impact with regards to being Mitaher, this Eiver? That's Rabbi Meir's response to them. Then the Mishnah takes a step back and says, wait a minute. Uminayin l'trefa, sheshchitata mitaharata. How do you know that the trefa, a Shechita, helps to be Mitaheret? That's your underlying assumption. How do we know that that works? Behema Tmeya asura ba'achila. Af trefa asura ba'achila. You would have thought just the opposite. Because a behema tmeya, a non-kosher animal, you cannot eat. Trefa, you also cannot eat. So what would you say? Ma behema tmeya ein shchitata mitarata. If you shech the non-kosher animal, has zero impact. It's still a nevela. It's still mitama. So af trefa, lo titarena shchita. Right? Why should the shchita or shchitata? Why should the shchita of the trefa have any impact here in terms of mitayer midei nevela? Rav says, well, iyam amart bebehemat meya shelo aitala sha'ata kosher. When it comes to a behemat meya, it never was kosher. There was never a chance that this animal could be kosher. Tomar betrefa sha'aitala sha'ata kosher. A trefa at some point in his life was a kosher animal, and it could have been shechted. Now it's a trefa. So now Rabbi Meir, or the Mishnah, they respond, tulach ma'she'evaita. That cannot be the reasoning over here. Take it back. Then what would you do with the trefa that was born a trefa? If it's born a trefa, it never had a shata kosher. Over there, you're going to suggest that the shechita is not mitaher to midei nevela. We know that that's not the case. Mar says, lo, im amart bebehema tmeya, shekein ein bemina shechita. By non-kosher animals, shechita is never relevant. It's never relevant for any reason whatsoever. Therefore, the shechita has no impact on the non-kosher animal. Tumar betrefa sheyesh bemina shechita. That's not true of a trefa. Trefa is a unique circumstance or subset of kosher animals. Kosher animals in general, shechita has impact on them. It's just the trefa has this soul in it that doesn't allow you to eat it, but it should still be under the category of animals that are shechted. And if that's the case, the shechita should work to be mitaheret midei in the vela. Correct. You would have assumed that behemah tmeah and treifa should have the same outcome. Mishnah comes and gives you a logical argument why they should not be or not have the same outcome. And now, ben shmona chai, ein shechitato mitaharato. So now, if you take this one step further, ben shmona chai, if a fetus that's born after 8 months, shechita should have no impact on it because it never can live. Lefi she'ein b'mino shechita. Shechita never works by a ben shmona, because a ben shmona is never considered to be a real behema or behema chaya. There will never be a situation in which you have an 8-month-old fetus that becomes a living or a surviving animal. And that's what Rashi says. It's not even called a bakar vetzon, it's called the evin. That's what the Gemara Shabbos calls a fetus that's born after 8 months.
If 7 is okay and 9 is okay.
Correct. 8, that's problematic. Here the Gemara is suggesting the same is applicable by animals. That'll have the same gestation as human beings of 9 months, and therefore the Gemara is applying the same dinim that we see by the humans, about 7 and 9 being a bar kayama, and 8 months being an untenable birth or a non-viable fetus. Alright, so Gemara says, Amai, why, when you sever that limb that is tamei tumat nevela, why is the remaining fetus now either tumei magat tuma, let's call it according to Rabbi Meir, tumat nevela? Why is that? Tumat beit hastarim hi. The contact between the limb and the fetus is a magat beit hastarim. The contact between them when you begin to slice the aver off is something that is covered up, not visible. And we know that tumat beit hastarim cannot convey tuma. The connection between this leg, this aver, and the rest of the fetus is beit hastarim. It's not something that's a visible contact. Contact that you have between this aver and the fetus, all the contact happens at points that are covered, meaning that they are sealed together, they're connected, and why should it convey tumah if it's tumat beit hastarim? Gemara says, v'tumat beit hastarim lo mitamah. We know that, that tumat beit hastarim, that's underlying assumption. Even when we thought that tumah bluah didn't work, we thought at least tumat beit hastarim did work. So lema, Rabbi Meir l'tameh. Rabbi Meir, being the author here of that position, let's say that he is the shitato, the tnan. Shlosha al shlosha. Shlosha al shlosha, it's in the male formulation, which means 3 tfachim by 3 tfachim. Shenachlak tohor min hamidras, aval tamei maga midras. Over here it says, divir Rabbi Meir, v'tanya, none of those appear in the Mishnah. The Mishnah actually has, aval tamei maga midras, period. The assumption is it's Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir is the Tanakama in this case, and then Amar Rabbi Yossi is the latter half of that Mishnah. So in this Mishnah, you have an object which is 3 by 3 tfachim. 3 by 3 tfachim is the smallest entity that can be mekabel tumat midras. Go ahead and nechlak, you tear it in half. You tear it in half, it's now tahor mina midras, because it's no longer the minimum size of being mekabel tumat midras, because you've now ripped it in half, it's less than 3 by 3 tfachim. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir suggests over here, it's still tamei maga midras. Okay, it's not tamei midras, but it's tamei maga midras. It touched a midras. Well, where did it touch the midras? When you're ripping the baguette in half, it touched itself. It seems to be that there's a maga here. And that's what Rabbi Yossi says. I'm Rabbi Yossi. Bechezo midras nagazeh. Which midras did it touch? Ella, shimnaga bozav, sheitamei magazav. If you're talking about the zav touching it, then it's tamei tumat magazav. It's not going to be tamei of contact with a midras. So let's understand what happened here. Tosfot over here creates the case. If you look at the top Tosfot, mitchila kishenitma midras. In the first place, when it became tamei tumat midras, tzarich lomar dayash sham pshutei kliyetz mafsik ben raglo the beged, that we're separating between the contact of the zav and the beged itself. Midras is if the zav puts his weight on, steps on, sleeps on, sits on the object. He doesn't have to be in contact with it. He just has to sleep on top of it, and that object, wherever he's on top of, has contact with it. Pshutei kliyetz unam mekabel tuma. So over here, I have an individual who sleeps on top of a plank of wood, which below it has this cloth. The cloth is now tamei tumat midras, but has no direct contact with the zav himself. No contact with the zav himself, therefore it cannot be tamei tumat maga hazav, and it cannot be tamei tumat Maga midras, because again, it didn't come into contact with anything that had midras. So that'd be the situation that we're dealing with. So lav itmar ala, didn't we say about this case? Amar ula. Loshna ela shlosha shlosha. The machlok between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir is only when you have a beged of 3x3 tefachim, shenechlak, that was split in half. Aval shalosha shalosh. Shalosha shalosh means 3x3, but here in the female, so here would be 3x3. You only have two choices in the female measurements, either amot or etzbaot. Obviously over here it's not talking about amot, it's talking about etzbaot. So that's 3 finger breadths by 3 finger breadths, which is the minimum shear of a piece of cloth that can be mekabel tum'ah, because it's good enough for an ani to use as a patch. So this shalosh al shalosh haba'ot mi beged gadol, that comes from a much larger piece of cloth or a beged, b'shat prishatan mi'avihen mekablo tum'ah. When they separate from their larger piece of the beged, they become tamei. Hanami b'shat prishatan mi'ever mekabel tum'ah mi'ever. So to over here, the reason that this fetus is mekabel tum'ah is because it's the equivalent of the case of taking away a small beged from a much larger beged. So to here, you're taking away a single aver from a much larger animal. Why does that make a difference? So Rashi says over here that Hacham Mode, over here, Rabbi Yossi agrees in this situation. The Bishat Prishatan Mi'aviv, E of Charlotte Samtzain. You can add to it perfectly. Shelo Yigam Atmat. At least something will touch. As you're cutting them, you have a much larger beged and a smaller beged, there's got to be some contact between them. Ubishat Prishain of Beit Starim. And when you're severing it, there is no Beit HaStarim anymore, because once you've severed it, you've now opened up an area that is visible. Again, if you're ripping it in half, if you're making a single beged in half, the 3x3 tefachim in half, over there, as you tear it, right, you're severing the two pieces, there's no guarantee that the two pieces add to touch, and even if they touch, may not make a difference. Because as soon as it's ripped, each side is missing the 3x3 tefachim, there's no longer any tumat midras. But when you take it away from a larger beged, the larger beged remains tamei tumat midras. So when you take away the smaller piece, as you're cutting it, if it comes into contact with the bigger piece, there's still tumat midras there. And that will cause the tumat to be conveyed. So to over here, when you have the large fetus and the small limb that you're cutting off, as you begin to sever the limb, right, the larger fetus is still intact there, and the limb can come into some contact with it in the open area that's been cut, for at least some little contact, and that will create or convey the tumah to the larger fetus that remains. So that's the Gemara's understanding of the Mishnah. The Meretz Havamino was, this was Rabbi Meir the Shittato. The Rabbi Meir the Shittato, that when you tear something that has a higher level of tumah, when you tear it, it has a classification as if it touched that higher level of tumah. When you rip this beged, that's tamei tumat midras, when you rip it in half, okay, you got rid of the tumat midras, but it has a status of maga midras, even though it was tumat beit hasterim. Nevertheless, it drops down a level, it's as if it touched that item. Rabbi Yossi disagrees, and Rabbi Yossi says that that's tumat beit hasterim. It doesn't work. It's not, there's no maga here, there's no touching. So they disagree in that case. The Havamina was, that was Rabbi Meir the Shittato. The Gemara concludes, no, that we have Ula, who qualifies that machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, says it's only when you have an exact measurement of tumat midras, which is 3 tefachim by 3 tefachim. Because as soon as you tear it, the tumat midras disappears, and therefore Rabbi Yossi has a question, where did you have the maga? But when you come off a larger beged, where the tumat midras remains even after you've taken off the piece of the beged, there even Rabbi Yossi agrees there's been contact. Because the contact with the remaining beged, which remains with the tumat midras, will cause the smaller piece that you're taking off to have maga tumat midras. Because tumat midras is 3x3 tefachim. 3x3 tefachim is the minimum shear for tumat midras. 3x3 etzbaot is the minimum shear for a beged to be mekabel tuma in general. Just not, it can't be mekabel tumat midras. So over here, the question is it mekabel tumat maga midras? The mayor says yes. Rabbi Yossi says no. But they agree when that 3x3 etzbaot beged severs from a larger beged that retains its tumat midras. Even Rabbi Yossi will agree that that has tamei tumat maga midras. And the same thing will be true here by our fetus. You're severing a single aver from a much larger fetus, then we're going to say the same thing, that there is still contact between them, even at the point of severing. That contact will convey the tumah from the aver back to the remaining fetus. I just want to point out here, they're from very large Tosafot over here. very large Tosafot, and they're all dealing with one issue. And that one issue is, how do you have Magah Hazav after something is Tameh Tumat Midras? Something's already Tameh Tumat Midras. It's a much more Chamur Tumah. That's like coming along and saying someone who's Tameh Tumat Tameh then also becomes Tameh Tumat Sheretz. It's not relevant. Tumat Sheretz is not relevant to someone who's already Tameh Tumat Tameh. Tumat Tameh is a Tumah that's much more Chamur. Tumat Sheretz, if the person becomes in contact with the Sheretz at that point in time, it's irrelevant in terms of the Tumah that he has. If he's Mater himself from the Tumat Tameh, then the Tumat Sheretz goes away by itself too. So how do you have here a situation in which you have Tumat Midras, and then you also have some incidental contact that causes Magah Zav or Magah Tumat Midras? How do you have a lower form of Tumah be conveyed to something that has a higher level of Tumah? So Tosafot, as you can see in the first couple of lines here of the Tosafot, he says, on it's on Ayin Bet Amud Bet, the second Tosafot, he says, Shinagabo Mikamei Midras. There have to be two options here. Either the contact happened before the Midras. That means that, for instance, the human being was already Tamei Tumat Sheretz before they became Tamei Tumat Tameit. Meaning that Tumat existed, pre-existed. Oh, like Shaul just said, Shiachet Daras, he walked barefoot on it. Double and Midrasu Magaza Bevat Achat, they happened simultaneously. Diva the Sof, Lo'ati Magadakil, Vechale Midras Achamur. Can't have some lower form of Tumah have any impact on something that has a higher level of Tumah. That's Tosafot's underlying assumption. That's why before he said Tahor Min HaMidras, he said that it had to be when the Zav came into contact with it through a piece of wood, which did not convey Tumah. That's why there's only Tumat Midras there. But if it happened simultaneously, then you have simultaneous contact with the Zav and Tumata Midras. And that's the only way that it'll be Tumat Magazav, is when they happen simultaneously or prior to that it happened to Magazav. Then you have the position of Rabbi Yossi that if the Midras goes away, then the Tumat Magazav still exists.
Rabbi Shimshon offers an alternative that there is a possibility of having a lower form of Tumah sit on top or enter when there is a higher form of Tumah. And then he says, Rabbi Shimshon Omer, that we don't say that the Tumah is ended when it emanates from itself. Even if it's a lighter form of Tumah, it exists or coexists with the Chamur Tumah, even if it came after the fact. But that is because it emanates, the Tumah itself emanates from the item itself, not from an external factor. In our case, we're dealing with external factors, so in order again for it to have the lighter form of Tumah coexist, it will either have to precede it or happen simultaneously. But there are incidents and other cases in Shas where the Tumah Kala emanates from the item itself, and therefore the Tumah Kala could even succeed the Tumah Chamura and coexist with it.
One issue that Tosfos deals with in this much larger Tosfot, Tosafot brings other cases in Shas where we're able to sever an Aver and have it remain separate from the entity, that the Tumah is not conveyed. So Tosafot says, how come over here we have a problem? And over here in Shas, you can sever the Aver without any problem. So Tosafot gives a number of options. One is that Nitaz B'chol Kocho. There's different ways of cutting an Aver. You can cut an Aver by slicing it, and that's a slow process of severing the Aver. The other way is to axe it. When you axe it, then you actually could sever the aver without any contact, incidental contact happening. Because there it happens in one shot. When you axe it with all your strength, then the aver separates without any incidental contact. So Tosafot separates with the way that you sever the behema. If you sever the aver in a way that takes time, that there could be incidental contact, then there will be conveyance of Tumah. But then if you do it in an axe manner, we do it in one shot, then there will be no incidental contact, there will be no conveyance of Tumah. He says also, he gives another option, which is, Kigon shechotech v'sachin rechava. Shemafseket ha-sachin v'mah shebechutz v'mah shebifnim. Or if you use a very wide knife, large wide knife, that will make sure, or make certain, that there is, it's a wide knife, a long knife, which makes certain that the knife is always separating between the part that it's cutting off and the original behemah. So if that's the case, also, you can be sure that there was no incidental contact. So Tosafot comes up with scenarios where you could sever the aver and not have this incidental contact. Our Gemara has to be talking about a case where he did it in a slow manner, as well as the fact that he did it in a manner where there would be incidental contact. The knife is not so big. That's what Tosafot is trying to deal with in these large Tosafot here, trying to explain how, number one, we can have Magah and Midras happen simultaneously. Does that work, or how do you have that? And number two is, how do you have the severing of the Aver where there is incidental contact and when there is not incidental contact? Ravina Amar, Beged, Lav, Lechaticha, Kai. When it comes to a Beged's not made to be cut. Ubar lechaticha kai. A fetus is meant to be quartered. So since by the beged it's not for chaticha, then we don't consider it to be as if, we don't consider as if it's contacted at that point in time. There's no maga, because it's maga beta starim. When you cut it, you're doing something that is out of the ordinary to the beged. Ubar, which is the chaticha koi, which is omeid to be chotech, b'chol omeid achtoch, kechaduch domi. Since it's going to eventually be severed, over here it's going to be severed because you're going to have to remove this limb, because this limb is not kosher to eat. So you have to remove it. So it's omeid achtoch. Ubar is omeid achtoch, because you have to take this off, because you can't eat this piece of the ubar. Therefore, omeid achtoch, kechaduch domi. Anything that is eventually going to be cut, that is end status as if it happened now, and therefore it's not no longer tumat beta starim. It's as if it's already severed, and that the contact is contact of visible contact. Kiman, who's this like? This is like Rabbi Meir again. Why is it like Rabbi Meir? The Tanan, we have a Mishnah in Mikvaot. Kol yadot kelim shein arukot. If you have a handle of a keli that's too long for its normal use, in the end, batid lekatzitzan. And you're going to sever that part of the handle because it's just too long. Matbil ad mekom midah. If to make it kosher and to be matbil this clean in the mikveh, all you have to do is put it into the mikveh up to the point where you're going to keep of the handle. Till the point you're going to keep of the handle, that's where you have to put in the mikveh. Everything that's extra beyond that point that you're eventually going to cut off, we look as if kichatuch dami. It's as if it's cut off already. And we don't worry about it being there.
So Safo points out over here that we have to be talking about a handle that's some sort of chain link type of handle. Otherwise, the remaining part of the handle that's not severed will be a chatzitza, meaning that the end of the handle never entered into the mikveh. So it has to be something that is quasi-porous, allows for the water to enter, a chain link type of item that allows the water to get in there, so it's not a problem of chatzitza.
And then we have a machloket over there. That is Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ad shiyad bilut kulo. That you have to put the whole thing in. Doesn't work. You have to put the whole thing in. Where it says, afilu teima rabbanon, or shitat Rabbi Yehuda, chiburei oklim keman de mafritei dami, v'nigiei ba'adodi. When it comes to ochel that is attached, we don't classify that as being a real attachment. Chiburei oklim is as if it's severed already. That's not a real attachment. That's not a real, I would call it, singular unit. Because again, eventually they're going to be cut up, they're going to be taken away and sliced up, and therefore it's considered severed. Now Tosfot again qualifies this and says, "V'yesh lomar de'lo aminan keman de'mifritei dami ella hechad omei de'katzeitz kama hacha." That has to be that we say that ochel's mifritei dami when you have to sever it, and here in this case you have to sever it because it's an aver that you cannot eat. So Tosfot says we don't just generally say that all ochel is not considered to be attached. It's here in this particular case where you're going to have to separate the ochel that's not considered to be attached. But anything that's entirely asur, where you don't have to sever it, then we're not going to look at it as being separate entities or broken up already. That we will not say. We only say it when you have to remove this item. So because of that, chiburei ochlim keman miftei dami v'nigei v'hadadi. It's as if they were connected. So there are two ways that we can explain a Ravina. Ravina says that there's a difference here between the ochel and the beged. The beged is supposed to stay together. So therefore it remains maga beta starim, and when you cut it, you're doing something unusual to the beged. The ochel here has to separate. It has to separate because that aver is asur, and you're going to have to remove it. So therefore, either if you hold like Rabbi Meir, it's considered as if chatuch dami, it's already as if it's severed, and therefore there's no tumat maga beta starim, or it's like the chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, that's ochel demifrite. It's considered, ochel as if it's considered broken into pieces already. Again, Tosfot qualifies that's in a case where you're going to have to separate it. Ochel is a bunch of pieces put together and not a single unit, whereas a beged is a single unit. Now Gemara says, bishlam al ba'ulo, works well according to una hainu diktani chatcha, that he cut it off. Because according to ulo, it's not tamei, the ubar is not tamei until you actually cut this piece of the aver off. Because it's the contact between the severed aver and the remaining fetus that causes the tumah, but you have to at least start cutting it. Elul Ravina, my chatcha. According to Ravina, you never need to cut it. It's tamei already, conveys the tumah even before cutting it, because it's kechatuch dami. It's as if it's cut already. So I did the tana reisha chatcha, tani nami same chatcha. And the reisha chatcha is important. In the first case in the Mishnah, the chatcha is what leaves the ubar to remain tahor. It's because you severed the aver before the ubar died. So therefore, that's what keeps the ubar tahor, is because you actually severed the aver. On the other hand, over here in the seifa, the severing of the aver is not important. According to Ravina, it's not important. Why did they mention it? Because of parallel structure. Reisha said chotcha, Sefer says chotcha. But ain ochanami, even if you didn't sever it, it would convey tuma to the fetus, even without cutting it off. And that would be the position of Ravina versus Ula. So we have two explanations of how the tuma was conveyed over here. We asked that it was tuma beit asterim. One answer is given by Ula. That's only true. Tuma beit asterim only applies when you have an exact shiur. But when you take away a smaller piece from a larger piece, then over there we do say that even though when you're slicing it, generally there is no maga, everybody will agree when you're taking something big, small away from something large, there is some incidental contact, and that incidental contact, the tuma will be conveyed. That's Ula's position. Rav Ivanin's position is this is something that will eventually have to be severed. Therefore it's looked as if it is severed. If severed, then it conveys the tuma because it's no longer tuma to beit asterim, either because of Rabbi Meir, which means that it doesn't exist, or according to the Chachamim, because it's ochel de ifrat dami. And that's why there's no problem of tuma to beit asterim. Just one more thing, I'll do one more line here in the Gemara, which is something we asked on the Mishnah, which is, Chachamim arim magat shreifa shkuta. Treifa shkuta mi mitamyo. A treifa shkuta does not convey tuma. That's exactly what we learned in the Mishnah. A treifa that gets shkita doesn't have tuma tevela. So what do the Chachamim say? It's maga, tuma, treifa shkuta. There is no tuma. So what are they talking about? In kedavu deshmo, this is like the memory of avu deshmo. The amar avu deshmo treifa sheshachta mitama bemukdashim. It's a tuma derabanan. A tuma derabanan mi deoraita. There is no tuma here. It has no impact. But me, the Rabbanan made a treifa that was shchuta, conveyed tuma to kodoshim. So when the Chachamim say it's like maga, tuma of a treifa, it means the Rabbanan. There's a tuma the Rabbanan here that's conveyed that makes it problematic if it's mukdashim. It's only problematic if it's from the mukdashim. It's not problematic if it is from the chulin. That's the end of the sugya. We'll continue tomorrow with the rest of the Gemara.